Hello, and welcome to the latest Engineers Against Poverty in Conversation with podcast. I am John Hawkins, EAP Programme Director, and in this series we hear from a wide range of voices from around the world to discuss some of the critical issues in the world of infrastructure, engineering and development. Today I am joined by Sebgatula Karimi, a civil engineer by profession and until recently the manager of the Infrastructure Transparency Initiative Cost Afghanistan program. It is now almost a year since the Taliban took control of Afghanistan, and we thought we should reflect on what was achieved since Afghanistan joined COST in 2013. As you'll hear, Karimi was incredibly committed to COST, working with his colleagues in a highly challenging environment that put their lives at risk and has ultimately meant that they are now starting new lives with their families in a different country. Welcome, Karimi. You studied civil engineering in Kabul in the early 2000s, then completed a master's program in the UK. What are your memories of that time, and why did you return to Afghanistan?
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast, and I'm very happy to join this podcast. After 9/11, 2001, a unique opportunity appeared for the people of Afghanistan, and especially for me. So I was living in the far east of the country, northeast of the country, in a province called Badakhshan. So when a new opportunity appeared to us, so I moved to Kabul and started preparation for to get admission in one of Afghanistan's universities, especially engineering universities. And why I have selected engineering, because the destruction caused by the war in Afghanistan, and I was thinking that if I study engineering, I should contribute to the reconstruction and building of Afghanistan. Unfortunately, in 2002, I got the opportunity to get admission in one of Afghanistan's leading university, especially in engineering, Kabul Polytechnic University. So I have studied there the civil engineering, and after 5 years, I have graduated from the university. So when I completed the university, I was qualified to be a faculty member, and so I become a faculty member, and then I secured a scholarship through the university and for pursuing my master degree. Unfortunately, I received a scholarship from one of UK's university, and then I moved to the UK. When I moved to the UK, I have been there for more than 3 years, and I have completed my master degree, and I had plenty of opportunities in the UK just to stay there and to work in UK's construction industry. But the passion that I have and the commitment that I have for my country, so I returned to Afghanistan and start working in academia and also in the construction industry. So this is all my memories from my being in the UK and also for studying civil engineering.
Okay, thank you. And Karimi, I mean, obviously that was a really huge time for the country following the US in kind of removal of the Taliban in 2001. And obviously, you know, there was a lot of investment in infrastructure going on in terms of reconstruction with the new government. And a very challenging time for the country with the insurgency. So, you know, at that time, why did the government of Afghanistan, you know, choose to join COST?
Yeah, it's a very good question. The international community came to Afghanistan and they wanted to help the people of Afghanistan, the government of Afghanistan, and there was more than 40 countries they were entrusted to rebuild Afghanistan. And alone According to a report by CIGAR, only the US, United States, invested more than $145 billion between 2002 to 2021 to reconstruct and rebuild Afghanistan. So considering all the huge investment in infrastructure sector, unfortunately, the quality of infrastructure sector was not improved as planned. And people was criticizing the government, the civil society, the media was criticizing the government. Why, despite this all huge investment and international community support, why the quality of the infrastructure sector is not improved? And they found that, later they found that there is lack of transparency, lack of accountability, and the corruption is widespread. And people don't know where the money comes from and how they spend the money, and so there is a lack of line of accountability, and that's why just they put huge pressure on government and that to join cost and to improve transparency and accountability in this sector. So that's why the government of Afghanistan, through advocacy by civil society organizations, they joined cost and started working to reform the infrastructure sector.
Now, I mean, it's an amazing figure you've just said there. I mean, $145 billion. I mean, from the, you know, just that, and that's just the US alone. I mean, there'll be the you know, the various IFIs and you know, the UK and, you know, a lot of huge investment in the into the country, and it's from your own experience, did you see kind of results of this investments? Could you see infrastructure improving?
Thank you so much. Sorry. So you know, as per my experience, the only problem that we had, it was lack of management. They were spending millions and millions of dollars to build a 1 kilometer, for instance, asphalt road. But the quality of the road was extremely poor in most cases. And the quality of the infrastructure was extremely poor. And through researches, we found that there is mismanagement and there is corruption. So, for instance, they are contracting 1 kilometer asphalt road for $1 million, and they are spending only $200,000 on that road. And the amount of $800,000 they are losing that through mismanagement, through corruptions, through collusion, through lots of things. So that's why just it was clear and it was evident for every people, for every person, that why all this huge investment coming to the infrastructure sector, but why we are having poor roads, poor quality roads, and why it's not improved? What's the problem? So although, you know, just we should not cover our eyes, and there was some improvements. There was we had roads, we had access to electricity and to some key infrastructures, but the quality and the, especially the value for money, which is cost is seeking for, the value for money was not there. So just you are thinking that why just billions of dollars, but where is billions of dollars? The impact of billions of dollars, why the life of the people is not improved, why the quality is not improved, where is the institutional arrangement, where is the capacity? So that's why it was a big question mark for the people of Afghanistan, and they put pressure on government to join international initiatives such as COST, Open Government partnership, just to bring reforms and to change the situation in infrastructure sector.
So it's almost as though there wasn't that kind of institutional capacity to manage the money. It's all this money going into these institutions, but they just didn't have the capacity and systems to manage it. And I read that the Minister of Public Works at the time that Afghanistan joined COS in 2013, you know, you mentioned the poor quality roads, and he suspended all road projects due to these issues, which really, you know, says everything. And then Karima, you joined COST Afghanistan in 2016, and I think we've all been impressed by your passion and energy and commitment. And you know, why has COST been so important to you over the last 6 years?
First of all, you know, construction industry is my profession because I have studied construction industry. So, and cost was the thing that I was wanting. So that's why I have joined cost. And also what is encouraged me to stay this long time with cost, I have worked with cost for more than 6 years. So the motivation behind this long stay with cost was the uniqueness of cost. And with cost, I was learning new things, and I was and also I kind of seeing the impact and the result of my work around myself, and I was saying that there is changes in the infrastructure sectors, the perception of the peoples and the perception of civil society is changing, the perception of government is changing, the perception of people is changing. So that's why all this encouraged me that to stay with cost and to work with cost, and also to just to see the changes and the reforms around myself, and to serve my people and my country.
Yeah, and I mean, we've been so impressed. I mean, for our listeners, when Karimi was forced to leave Afghanistan, he still kept working on the Infrastructure Transparency Index for Afghanistan, because he knew that we were trying to gather results from 5 or 6 countries and see what it all looked like as the kind of initial pilot, and he was so committed that even in the difficult circumstances he was in, he was committed to finishing it, which we all, you know, we were amazed about. And I think Karimi obviously took some time to get the COST Afghanistan program moving forward, but I think a critical milestone was the publication of the first assurance report in 2018. And it's interesting that we just mentioned about changing perceptions, and it'd be interesting to hear how the assurance report helped change those perceptions, because it was, I think, what was so good about it. I mean, it looked at 8 different projects, and what was great about it were these simple statements based on facts. And the example that I really liked was on the Kamal Khan Dam project, where 6 of the 7 nominated companies in the procurement were from Turkey. That followed an official government visit to the country. And the report simply asked why Turkey was considered the sole source of approaching qualified companies, and why most of the nominated companies are Turkish. How did the government and other stakeholders really respond to the report the style of the report, the narrative that kind of highlighting these type of issues?
Thank you. You know, just through our stay, our operation in Afghanistan, we have developed 3 assurance reports, and we published 3 assurance reports. And the question that you have pointed out to, it's about first assurance report. You know, the assurance process that we were doing in Afghanistan, it was a collaborative work between government, civil society, and the private sector. So, and the result that the findings and result that comes out of those assurance report were welcoming by the sector. So, because you know they were involved during the development of the assurance process, and it was fact-based findings. So that's why they always welcomed the findings of the assurance report, and they said this is exactly the problem and the challenge that we have in the infrastructure sector, and we should address it. So also previously, just I have mentioned about institutional capacity. You know, the procurement capacity, the tendering process and procurement capacity of infrastructure sector was extremely, extremely low when the international community came to Afghanistan. And that's why, so we have lost huge investment in infrastructure sectors. And there is reports about corruptions, about collusions, about mismanagements, about challenges and problems in the infrastructure sector of Afghanistan. So about the projects that you have mentioned, Kamal Khan Dam, so you know that it was evident that there is problems and corruption in the procurement process, and the procurement law is not going to be followed by the institutions and also by procurement officers. And you know that as the first assurance report pointed out to this, so they have invited six people from Turkey. So this is against the procurement law, and it shows some sort of collusion and some sort of kind of arrangements. And that's why, just based on the facts, the first assurance report pointed out to this problem and simply asked the question, why you have invited six people from Turkey, while according to the law, there should be only one bidder from each country, but you have invited six bidders from one country, and that is Turkey. Why you have preferred Turkey, and why you have selected 10 tenders from Turkey? So this was a question, a fact-based question, and that we asked through our first assurance report, and that's why this question created a big noise on the media and among the civil society, and pushed the government that to think about and to think about changes, to think about reforms, and to think about how to improve the institutional and also the procurement capacity.
So, and Creamy, and then the Minister of Transport, who was then Yamayari, he responded very well to the report, didn't he, in terms of some institutional changes. And it'd be great if you could just describe what kind of changes he introduced and the impact that led to.
Exactly. I wanted to tell you that Yamayari was a very qualified minister, and he was passionately working for the country to improve the road sector. And he was always welcoming cost findings and cost reforms on the infrastructure sector. So when we published our assurance report, so we had a meeting with him and said, look, this is the findings, fact-based findings. So what do you think? And I remember the time that he told me that I totally agree with you. We have, especially in one of the most important findings in our assurance report, was problem in the design process of infrastructure projects. And because also he was a civil engineer, and also I was a civil engineer. So we have discussed together and said, look, there is the design problem, and the report also pointed out to this one. And he said, I totally agree. We have lots of problem in the design process. And this design causes delays, cost overruns, and also sometimes the project is not meeting the people demands, and also not meeting the geographical location of the projects. So it's kind of sometime, you know, because of most of the designs were kind of typical and were not based on demands and needs of the people. So we have discussed together, and then after our discussions, they have formed a committee, or not a committee, a unit. They have formed a unit, and the job of the unit was that. So just they should review the designs. When the design department completed the design of the projects, they created another unit to screen the designs, to review the designs, and then the design should go to the procurement and then to the implementation. So through this unit, and it works for a short period of time, unfortunately. So this unit saved more than $8 million only for reviewing of around 100 projects, small projects to big projects. So during the reviewing process, it was very, very interesting for us. So we found something, it was really strange because, you know, for some projects, for instance, they have estimated the excavation, but the actual excavation work was much less than the estimated one. So it seems like there is kind of there was possibilities of two things. The first thing might be technical errors, and the second thing it seems that there is kind of collusions and corruption between the designer and the contractor. So through this simple thing that we have saved more than $8 million of dollars. So this was a response to our assurance an immediate and short-term response to our assurance reports. But I could talk about what was the long-term impact of the assurance process maybe and next steps. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. I mean, a long time ago, I did some research for what was then Department for International Development. And one of the things we were pointing out, and actually using some evidence from other assurance reports, is, you know, the same matter, and you've really highlighted a good one, you know, in terms of quantities and rates and excavation, is, you know, what could something could be equally be mass mismanagement, could easily be, as you say, collusion and corruption. And it's very, very difficult to actually see which, you know, which way it could be. It's very, very difficult. So I think what that highlights, though, is the how the minister reacted is really how successful COS Afghanistan has been, and be really interesting to hear kind of what other successes you've had, and you know, what are the reasons? Why do you think you've had this success when many other anti-corruption programs in Afghanistan have failed?
Yeah, it's a very good questions. Actually, there was lots of anti-corruption organizations, and some of them were relatively successful, but not all of them, because Afghanistan still was among the corrupt countries. And I think one of the big reason for this one was the security issues, and the security was not allowing the government to work on institutional capacity and to work on reforms, because, you know, they were kind of paying all the attentions how to control security situation around the country, and they were like putting a lot of money and investment on the security sector. So one of the reason why COST Afghanistan was successful in that tough time that the government was focused on security situation, why COST was relatively successful. And the most important reason was the teamwork that we had, the teamwork between government, civil society, and private sector. And we were really friendly. The Minister of Economy, Mr. Mustafa Mastur, and also Dr. Karima Hamid Faryabi, these two ministers, and also Minister Murad. I have worked with three ministers there. So they were really friendly and really supportive, and they were seeing the result of us, the importance of these initiatives, the research that we were doing, because and everything was clear for them. And that's why just they were very supportive, very collaborative. And we were working with civil society organization. And I want to also thank you, the Integrity Watch Afghanistan. They were providing very good technical support to us. So, and also other key government organizations, Minister of Energy and Water, and the Afghanistan's Builders Association, and we were working together as a team. And we were in our MSG meetings, we were discussing infrastructure challenges and solutions together, and we were hearing to each other. So the teamwork and the collaborative platform that was created by COST was the main reason that we were relatively successful. And I encourage other countries to join these collaborative platforms and to see the reform and the changes in infrastructure sector. And it was really working in Afghanistan, although the situation and the security was very tough. But it was working there, and I'm sure in other countries it's going to work very well.
Absolutely. And I think one of the great successes, and I think surprises to me, was how the influence of the National Procurement Authority, and I mean, they're already doing work with Open Government Partnership and Open Contracting Partnership on Open Contracting, and how they then, you know, did adapt the, took forward the cost kind of data standards and integrated those into their systems. And, you know, suddenly there was all this, you know, data and hundreds of infrastructure projects available. And I think that's something, you know, you just would not have foreseen, you know, 5 years ago. And I think another thing that I think has been really highlighted, you've highlighted, there is local ownership. You know, you had a strong ministerial support from the Ministry of Economy, but also, as I mentioned, National Procurement Authority, a Ministry of Transport, so that real political buy-in across the government, and along with the strong support of the private sector and civil society. And as you mentioned, I think Integrity Watch Afghanistan's experience and in community-based monitoring was, and their experience in terms of engaging government, relationship with government, I'm sure was helpful. And then, you know, obviously Afghanistan's got a very, you know, it's overwhelmingly a rural population. And how did you reach out to those communities, and what were the challenges?
You know, one of the key feature of COST is how we should empower citizens. Because if we are not empowering citizens, we cannot hold the government accountable. So it's kind of making a balance, you know. This is also I found this very challenging when I was working in Afghanistan, how to kind of make a balance that between private sector, government, and civil society. Because, you know, in some instances, if the government is, they are improving their capacities, publishing informations, and everything. So on the other hand, if you are not empowering the citizens, so how they should get access to project information, and how they should use these informations to hold the government accountable? So that's why just we found that as a kind of a gap, you know, and we thought about how we should address this one. And to answer these questions, also we have created a couple of concept notes and proposals, and how we kind of overcome these challenges on, or how we should answer to these questions. So that's why we commissioned some initiatives, such as we hold infrastructure talks. We had that every 3 months, 4 months, between civil society, government, and publics, you know, and just to discuss key issues in the infrastructure sectors. And through this, just we were supposing to build the capacity of the civil society and the public. And also another initiative that we took to access rural people, just we targeted academia, because what we were believing that in academia, especially in the engineering faculty, students are coming from rural areas across Afghanistan. So if we target them, so they also have some knowledge of engineering, and they also interested in engineering and construction issues, and they could get the message of cost to their communities, to the rural areas. And that's why just we have targeted academia, and we kind of signed a partnership between COST and Ministry of Higher Education. And through Ministry of Higher Education, they have introduced us to 4 key universities across Afghanistan, to 5 key universities across Afghanistan, 3 key universities in Kabul, Kabul Polytechnic University, and also Kabul University, and also 3 universities in different zones of Afghanistan, Mazar-i-Sharif University, Balkh University, and Herat University, and Jalalabad University. So the COST team traveled to those provinces, and we had meetings with engineering department and faculty members, and discuss about cost issues, about reforms, about transparency, accountability, and what are the changing that COST going to bring. So they were very interested, and they were welcome. They welcomed the initiative. Yeah. And then
sorry, Karim, were there 1 or 2 examples where you, I think with Integrity Watch Afghanistan, you went to 1 or 2 provinces and really engaged the local citizens there? But I mean, I guess there was also then the challenges of security and the insurgency. So how did you, yeah. So, I mean, it'd be good to hear about that kind of how you, how you did test out and go into 1 or 2 provinces, and also, you know, the security risk you and your team had.
Yeah, unfortunately, security was one of the big concern and the big problem hindering our progress in Afghanistan. Despite our team was working tirelessly, you know, to kind of push the reform, but security was a big problem. So we have kind of couple of measures to overcome security problems. For instance, we were reaching community leaders through Integrity Watch Afghanistan. As you know, that Integrity Watch Afghanistan had they have a program called community-based monitoring. They are running that program for a long time. So what we did, we contacted Integrity Watch Afghanistan and discussed this issue, and said how we should use this capacity, the existing capacity, to kind of deliver the COST messages to people, because there is lots of similarities between what COST is doing and Integrity Watch was doing, you know. So then we have invited community leaders and tell them that, look, you are doing infrastructure monitorings, but if you wanted to do infrastructure monitoring, you need to have access to data, especially to project data. How you should get access to project data, how to use this project data to kind of monitor infrastructure projects, and also how to use this project information to hold the government entities accountable. And also we introduced to them our assurance reports, the findings of the assurance reports. So through this initiative, we reach out to rural areas, to community leaders, and to kind of deliver the message of cost to them.
No, it's very interesting about how you reached out, and I think something we at the International Secretariat we began to really notice in the last year or two was how you had reached out to become more inclusive with the participation of women. So how did you approach kind of ensuring that the MSG and the program as a whole became more inclusive?
Yeah, first of all, you know, gender equality is one of cost values. So we were promoting this value across the world, especially in cost countries. So what we did in Afghanistan to kind of improve gender equality, so we kind of reaching out to procurement entities and tell them to introduce us a MSG member. So, and also we tell them that, we told them that we appreciate if you could introduce a woman as our MSG, as your MSG representative. So through this sample things that we involved women in the process, and it's a matter of how to be proactive, you know, and think about gender equality values. So through this, just we involve women in the process. And as you know, it's on the other hand, it's not easy, because it's sometimes, especially in countries like Afghanistan, it is hard to find women that they are working in the construction industry. And I think it's a fact around the world that, you know, construction industry is kind of a man in kind of intensify industry, or you know, just you know, men are working in this industry rather than women. In Afghanistan,
male orientated for many years. Yes, definitely.
Exactly.
I mean, it's great you brought on Furman Farou, who we actually interviewed 2 years ago for International Women's Day, who was an engineer by background, and he was then an advisor at the Minister of Energy and Water. So, and I know she became very much a kind of, you know, one of the kind of key figures on the MSG as well.
Exactly. Yeah. She was amazing. She was a professional engineer. She was dedicated, committed, and the views that she was sharing on our MSG meetings, so welcomed by everyone. So she was, although she was representing government entities, but she was open about challenges and problems, and she was sharing everything with civil society and with private sector. So, and also she helped us to bring some changes and reforms in the Minister of Energy and Water. You know, at that time it was Minister of Energy and Water, but later they changed the name. So we also just take some initiatives, some steps, how to reform the water sector in Afghanistan. So also the success stories of this one, and also the previous one that I have told you about Minister of Transport, they are all published in COST International websites, and our audiences could have access to those success stories and go through and read that one. It's very, very interesting. So the process, just brought changes and reform in the sector, and how we saved public money. So the success stories are there. So yeah, the Furman Farou helped us to achieve some of those successes, some of those reforms, and she was impressive. And also, I wanna to tell you about our later MSG chairman was a woman. I think I should say chairwoman, you know, chairwoman, and Dr. Karima Hamid Faryabi. And also she was very supportive, and she was encouraging and helping cause a lot. And we had women involvement in our MSG meeting, in our team. So it was really impressive. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think it was very, you're right. I mean, all the, as you said, the impact stories are on our website. And I think, you know, the changes within the reforms in the National Water Affairs Regulatory Authority are quite impressive and led to a review of enormous number of dams and, you know, large, big irrigation projects, things like that. It was, you know, extremely impressive, kind of the work that then the institutional reforms, what it kind of led to. So do look for that on our website. And finally, Karimi, it's, you know, clearly COSI is not going to be operating in Afghanistan for some time. But as you said, there is a legacy and lessons from COSI Afghanistan. And it'd be great if you could just, you know, finally share what you think those are.
Thank you so much. Yeah, unfortunately, due to kind of sudden changes that lots of things changed in Afghanistan's politics, and we were not expecting that this change could happen so soon, but unfortunately it happened. However, the good thing is that I believe there will be changes in politics in Afghanistan as soon as possible, because the situation, the current situation is not acceptable for anybody, and also for the international community. So there will be a changes in Afghanistan politics, and what I'm sure about, the values, the lessons that we have learned there, and the capacity, the legacy of COSI is there. The institutions, the procurement entities, the civil society, the private sector, they all know about COSI, about the values of COSI. So as soon as we resume our operation in Afghanistan, so we just, what we are going to do, we are going to build on those lessons and on those reforms and on those capacities. So the legacy is there, and we can build upon on that one. So during our stay in Afghanistan, and also another legacy that in Afghanistan that we have from COSI, you know, we really changed the perception of the people, the perception of the government regarding how to get access to project information and how to promote open data. So before that, you know, it was a taboo for it was kind of a cultural taboo for Afghanistan, and you know, just nobody kind of was allowed to talk about how to get access to technical documents, to technical data, and when you were asking that, can I have access to these data, they were saying, oh, it's government owned data, and the public not allowed to have access to this data. But what COSI and other international organization that are working for openness and open data, just they change this perception. And people understand that they are the owner of the public projects, and they should have access to public data. And the procurement entities convinced that that to share project data with the people. So these cultural changes and perception changes is the legacy of COSI and many other international organizations working for open data and open government, such as open contracting partnerships and open government partnerships. So they change the culture and they promote openness and access to information in the country. And the legacy is there. So this is, I think, really important. Just how to hold the government accountable and how to improve transparency and accountability in infrastructure sector.
Karimi, thank you for that. I mean, I know that's very. I think that's kind of, you know, for anywhere we want to work, changing that culture is so important. I think it's something we know, you know, we tend to talk about the kind of institutional, mechanical changes we want to make, but ultimately it is a cultural change that has to happen to get the, as you say, the kind of understanding of why access to information is important and using that information to generate kind of lasting impact. So thank you, Karimi. Thank you for your time. Just one side point here is that in preparation for this, Karimi said he really spent his whole life kind of with Afghanistan in conflict. This has been a backdrop to his life. And to think about that is, you know, your whole life where, you know, your country's in conflict is really quite staggering. So really, Karimi, thank you for sharing your thoughts today. It's really appreciated. Thank you to everyone listening. I'd hope you enjoyed this podcast, and we look forward to talking to you again soon. Goodbye.
Thank you.